Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/MaxineThompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. As you know, I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompson.com and MaxineThompsonBooks.com. I'm the author of award-winning novel, The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel, Hostage of Lies, short story collection, A Place Called Home, L.A. Blues, and upcoming novel due out May 27, L.A. Blues 2, Slipping into Darkness. I'm also available in ebook on Amazon Kindle. You can find my books by putting my name in, Maxine Thompson. Tonight's guest is best-selling author, publisher, and founder of Black Writers on Tour, Dr. Rosie Milligan. She's a return guest. She's always filled with a lot of wisdom, and Black Writers on Tour is coming up this Saturday, April 21st from 6 p.m., so it'll be a long day this year. We'll have much more of a treat than we had last year, but last year it was great. It went from 9 to 4, but now we got two more hours. So good evening. How are you doing, Dr. Milligan?
I am doing great. Looking forward to this weekend, and everybody is looking forward to your class. They keep calling it, Dr. Thompson going to do her class, How to Write a Best-Selling Novel. I said, you bet, she'll be right there.
Yes, I've got some new handouts, too. It's called a beat sheet for books. There's a lot of other things I'll be handing out that's a little different this year. So this is, I just can't wait. I've been looking forward to it since last year. But Dr. Milligan, tell us about yourself for those unfamiliar with you.
Well, I am an author and publisher. I started my publishing company in 1990. I've been writing all of my life, poetry, writing books, writing stories, short plays. Well, I wanted to do my book, and I heard so many people talking about they were getting rejected by New York, and it just didn't make sense to me in the first place to have someone to publish your book and you walk away with 10%, 7% of your intellectual properties. I feel that your intellectual properties are things that God gave you the creativity to do. And for you to just hand that over to somebody just for a little bit of money because you don't want to invest in your own dreams. I've always thought something was wrong with that. But the major thing, Dr. Thompson, I saw so many people who had expired, and people would find their manuscripts in their trunk or up under the bed or in the loft that they never got a chance to publish. Mm. So I decided to start my own publishing company, and then I started teaching other people how to set up their company after publishing 250 authors who, you know, their book baby would have been aborted if I had not come into the market to try to help them get it out there. So I just think it is so important.
And you, do you know that I always said you were a visionary and ahead of your time? Now I'm reading articles where more authors that were even with New York are self-publishing, and self-publishing isn't the stigma it used to be, and it's almost reversing that. It's a stigma when you stay with New York.
You know, people begin to understand how important it is to be in control of themselves, their, you know, self-autonomy. I think that's what people are looking at. They're looking at all of these books that's in remainder, and that the publishing houses are not really doing that much, if anything at all, to help the author to get that book into the face of the readers. So an author was taking planes and going across country. They had to do their own tour. It was just a very few back in the days authors that they were sending on city tours, and the rest of them had to make it the best way they knew how. And now with social media and with everything out there available, print on demand, Kindle and everything, people, the big publishers are shaking in their boots because people don't have to beg and plead with them anymore. They're doing their own thing.
Right, and they've had several millionaires on Kindle in the last 6 months, and Then they've had, I think, 15 New York Times bestsellers were from Kindle, as well as USA Today bestsellers. It's a whole new world, and this internet has been the very thing that has been the great equalizer and has broken down doors for writers. And so that makes it so much easier than when we were going from conference to conference and spending so much money going out of state. You technically don't even have to leave your house now and can sell books if you get on blog tours and, you know, connect with other forums. And now they got this new, I'm trying to learn how to do it, pin it. It's where you pin, and they say it can help you sell books too. It might be the next new big thing. And I'm still trying to learn that. I've joined it, and I've had people following me, and I still haven't figured out how to work it. But you pin your books and ideas and things you like and pictures on this site, and you can build, you know, a lot of following for your books as well. So there are so many new ways to get your books out. And then Kindle has so many programs that they have. Some are free, and then some you pay. But they say that when you pay, because there's so many million people on Amazon, you can still make money. But well, I still think it's a need for conferences like yours, though, Dr. Milliken. You know, we still need that face-to-face contact with people.
We do. Not only that, you get the experience from the other authors who have gone ahead of you, who can share you some pointers. It doesn't make sense to stab in the dog or the old folks that learn the hard way. Who needs to learn the hard way? It costs you too much money to try to learn the hard way. By the time you learn what you're doing, you don't have any more money for marketing. You're worn yourself out. Your family is sick of you because you've blown the household money that they can't see a return. So the conference is to help people to sharpen their axe, to really find out, you know, right up front. It's like having a baby. When you have the baby, you have to go and get the immunization, those shots and the TB tests and all that stuff. That's what we arm the author with. We give them what they need, and those who are seasoned, who've been out there for a while, then you become a booster, just like, you know, you get your shots, you get your booster shot. We constantly have to have something to keep us going. And the one who has the most knowledge is the one that's definitely going to be successful in this business, because you have to know the do's and don'ts. Even for something as simple as being a guest on radio or TV, you don't just think that you can go jump on somebody's show and be a great guest. You need to learn how to be a great guest so you can get invited back again.
Right. And I remember you paid for a class for us to take back, that was maybe 1999 or 2000.
Yes.
So you definitely prepared the writers that came through Milliken's Books and your professional publishing company, where they can learn a lot.
Well, I wanted them to see, Dr. Thompson, I don't even want to work with authors who don't see this as a business, because they would never do well. You really have to see it as a business. You have to market. You have to decide that you're going to put so many hours into working the business. You can't just write a book and go home and sit down and call the publisher and want to know how many books you sold. You know, it just doesn't work that way. And I think one thing that my authors learned at an early age, they learned how they had to do this thing themselves, because they saw New York writers thinking they could sit down and, you know, all the independent publishing company authors running circles around and getting on the best-selling lists and everything. Then they realized, I have to work.
Yes, a lot of them copy the things that they saw self-publishing authors do, such as the book clubs, you know, going on little small tours together. I remember you started doing that back in 90 when you used to take writers on tour.
The hardest thing for me was getting men together and finally got them talking about, we're not going to sleep in the same room. When I finished with them, they were understanding that economic peace and the camaraderie when you're out there with other authors. Some authors used to think that if they had other authors selling with them, they were going to miss something. They began to realize it brought about more people coming to the table. You may have an author who likes fiction and one who likes nonfiction. And we would just say, what do you like to read most? And it just brought more people to your table to have two or three authors standing there signing books, so you really didn't lose.
Yes, and I think the good thing when we travel together, I know we've been to BA in Chicago. Didn't they get locked out the cars? We had guys with us in seatbelts. It was so funny. We have had some good times on the road.
It was like babysitting those men. I tell you, yeah, they got us locked out the car.
Pouring rain.
Really?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Then we went to New York right after 9/11. I remember I was just hysterical. I didn't want
to
fly at all.
And we were able to do that because we have learned to share, how we share rooms, we share food. It just made it easy for authors to go on tour because the bookstores wasn't paying you to come, so you had to pay your own way. So if you could, I remember Don Spears and I used to go into a city. We rented a car together. We just did everything together, so it made it easier for us to do it.
Right. And didn't you say Don at first had a problem with having to sleep in the same room?
Because he thought, you know, well, this going to look funny. I said, you better get yourself over there and lay down. Your bed and my bed, we know what's going on. And after that, that's the only way he wanted to go. Can we go together? We shared cars. We shared hotels. I mean, we just had a ball.
Yes. I mean, this has been a good thing, and it's been 22 years since. When did you have the first Black Writers on Tour? I came to it, and it was standing room
only. I know it's
only.
Been 16 years ago.
Yes, it was really crowded.
16 years ago. And it's really, you know, we have writers from age 7 to 100 who have written books. And it's just so important that if we don't tell our stories, we will soon be written out of history. And I do this conference to create a love for writing for the elderly and a love for writing for the young people. Because if they don't fall in love with reading at an early age with this new technology, they won't even be picking up books. So if they don't read, Dr. Thompson, they're not going to be good writers. As you always stress in your class, in order to be a good writer, you need to be a reader. Some people want to write a book and they've never read one. It's just not going to work.
Right. And, you know, we're tired of writers bringing books to us that need almost ghostwriting just to get them in, you know, in any type of shape. But this is a craft. You study the craft. They got Writers Magazine. They got all types of online groups you can get critiques from. You can join writers groups. And writers don't want to put in the time. They just want to write something real quick and throw it to the editor to fix. What do you think about that, Dr. Miller?
I think it's interesting because I'm working with a young publisher now out of the D.C. area. And really teaching her the tricks of the trade and a lot of things that she used to do, she's not going to do anymore because she was doing this, almost rewriting people's books. And by the time you finish rewriting, then they can write real good once you have fixed it up. I mean, just waste a lot of your time. We are going to tell people to take seminars. You need to hone in on the craft. You owe better to the public. And if for someone to totally rewrite your book, the average person doesn't have that 15 and 20,000 for ghostwriters, so they're going to have to learn the skills, and then you can help them shape that book up. But it doesn't make sense the way some of these books are being presented. They don't even, I mean, I've gotten 300-page books with no chapter. I mean, just 300-page of going on and on writing, not even a paragraph indented. That's insane. Now, this has to stop, because if you read a book at all, you at least know when there's dialogue. If you want to write fiction, read fiction. And you'll see that there's dialogue. I mean, come on. It's time to go to the next level.
Yes, and it's time for readers to know the difference in nonfiction and fiction. Sometimes they'll write a book and you say, well, what kind of book is it? And they'll say it's fiction, but it'll be nonfiction.
Yeah, they don't even know the genre. But it's just time. You owe the public your best. You know, and the reason I do these conferences, Dr. Thompson, because, you know, the publishing industry is really expanding. And I think the word is out that almost everybody want to write a book. So you have some of these subsidy companies, they don't care what you write. They feel like, well, you know, black folks can't write anyway, so they don't care. They just take your money. Because I've gotten books that have been published out there, And it's just unbelievable. And they go, I thought they edited my book. I said, did you pay them to edit? If you read the contract, they tell you what the editing fees are. So you're trying to do a shortcut. So you send them your book. Sure, they format it, give you a cover, and you have a mess on the market. And they know how bad. They know that New York, those publishing companies are rejecting so many people, and all they have to do is say, yes, well, I'll take you. And that's what people are going for, and they're not getting good product.
Right. And they think because the company has gotten so many books now, a lot of those companies now have, you know, 20 and 30,000 books. So they think, oh, well, they must know what they're doing. But buyer beware. Everybody, I was working on a blog, and I haven't done it yet, about having, the, I called it business karma, that what you put out there comes back to you. When people are not doing good work, it comes back, because now some of these same ones that were so big, you know, and I don't want to call their names and even give them any, they're not as big now, because people are really, a lot of them have taken their rights back to their books. They're tired of these books with all the mistakes, and nobody buys them, and then the prices are too high for print on demand. Sometimes the book's only 100 pages, and they try to sell it for 20, and there's not like a textbook. Even the colleges are filling the pinch of the e-books now. They're saying that, you know, that they have books on sale. Now, those books that they used to sell for $500, they're not able to sell them now. They're being sold for $2 and $3 because all the students are just about going e-book.
Well, they really are, you know. But and I, what I want the audience to realize that there are still people who are old school and always will be, that's going to want to have a book in their hand. And the thing also there's an upsurge in, and that's children's books. And young, I would say the early teens, adolescent, we really have an African-American board for good books like that. I have one author who's doing her book, and she's going to unveil it. It's called Golden Childhood Memories, and it's so cute. It has so many stories in there for young people, like it had this little boy and a girl and her cousin, and neither one of them had sisters or brothers. So how she would play with him, and then when her friends come over, then she didn't want to play with him. And then later on, her mother had a baby, and the kid got about two. She would come into the room to play with them and knock down their stuff, and one day the mother heard them say, get out of here, you can't come in. And she go, why can't she come in? And my grandson read the book. He said, Mama, granted, this is Auntie Pam. This is Auntie Pam, because that's how she does. When Joan, you know, and his little brother, they play well. But when Cedric comes, you know how kids do then. They don't want to play with the little brother anymore. And it causes conflict. But the book is really good because it's based on true little stories that her grandkids and kids in her family, she saw them do. It's funny. You're really good at laugh out of it. You see yourself in there as a parent as you're reading those stories to children. So we need more children books, more books for, if we want them to read, Dr. Thompson, come on, let's find some good books for them to read.
Yes, because we see how The Hunger Games, that was a young adult book, has just blown up at the movies. And
it sure did.
And it's symbolic of what's going on in society today, which I want to get your take on the, if you don't want to speak on it, you know, because I know you're not a bandwagoner, but I just
on
feel
the movie?
Well, on the movie, but also on Trayvon Martin. I have that character, and I'm still working on my blog, seeing how important it is to write about historical events, which I like to write. You know, I've covered the L.A. riots and Detroit riots in a couple of my books, and I had a Trayvon who was murdered. He was wearing a hood and was mistaken. I wrote that 2 years ago in L.A. Blue. So I'm just seeing how art, life can imitate art sometimes.
Exactly. And two, what we have to look at, thank God for technology, because there's been a lot of Trayvons out there, but the public didn't get a chance to know about it. Now that people are writing, they're reading, they're spelling, they're sending, they're emailing, this technology have turned this whole thing around in every area of our life, whether it be the media, getting information out there, because when you can get national attention to a problem, it does help, you know, help to have something done about these problems. So there'll be a lot of stories. There's been enough written about Trayvon to do an anthology. One day I picked up the newspaper and they had 8 articles. Every person who writes for that newspaper had written about Trayvon. I said, I've never seen them put that many articles in one paper. Everybody was having their say and having their take on it, you know?
Right. Everybody feels that it could have been their child. He looks like anybody's son.
Right.
And so many people who have black sons are just, we've always known that we had this extra fear that we can't just rest easy, that they can even make mistakes that average teenagers can make. Who used to tell my sons when he was on the police, he'd say, their sons get in trouble, they get tapped on the hand at the LAPD. But y'all do one thing, y'all gone for life. You don't have nine lives. So it seemed like, and he told them right. And a lot of our kids need to know the two Americas we live in.
Right.
That,
right.
You know, everybody's acting like this race thing had gone somewhere because we had a black president. If anything, I've seen it rear its ugly head. I've never seen such a disrespectful public. I mean, nobody ever said Bush. It was always President Bush. Blunders and all.
I know.
We've got one of the most intelligent men in the White House, you know, who followed up with a lot of his promises. And I know within my family is people who have benefited from, and I've benefited from it too, you know, the different things that Obama put into. They're calling that a welfare state, you know, because
you're not
rich and got the, what is that, Buffett rule, where you don't, your secretary pays more tax than you pay, and you're the multi-billionaire.
I think what we're going to have to look at, Dr. Thompson, is that somebody needs to be pinning all this stuff, putting it in chronological order. See, we fail to really put something where the picture is painted just like a calendar. You know how you have a calendar at a jar? That's what we're going to have to do, because somebody, if we don't pass these stories down and the different things that happen, it'll be just like when I was on TV once and you were in the audience, when this young black man said to me, you're just trying to start up stuff because racism has been dead. Remember that? Racism is over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's right
in
your
face. About 12 years ago. My blog I'm working on, I was told in Hostage of Lies, and I actually wrote the book in 96 as No Pockets in a Shroud, and I had where the playwright in his Mercedes was pulled over. That was before they gave it the name Driving While Black and Racial Profiling. And the editor from New York said, this does not happen anymore. When is this book taken? I said, well, the book is set in 93. And then shortly after that, the professor was arrested in his own house. What's his name? Henry Louis Gates.
Henry Louis Gates, yes.
So, and that backed them off. They were trying to say, so I like to write this stuff down because, you know, racism has kind of gone underground in a way, but it rears its ugly head in instances like this and then what happened in Oklahoma recently.
Exactly. That's one thing I liked about your writing, because you were like, you know, on the upsurge of dealing with historical fiction, where you could intertwine truth and fiction, but yet bring a story in its reality. People talking about reality shows, that's really what some of your fiction novels are about. They actually bringing it into reality.
And a lot of it has to do with healing. I think when we can talk about these things, we can heal. Everything was so hush-hush in our growing up years. And I think a lot of it had to do with slavery, where everyone had to speak in a whisper and use his songs as metaphors, down by the river, swing low, you know, swing chariot, meaning that they covered through this way to pick you up if you want to get on the train and all like that. So
I think
we have kept that symbolic language
right.
And that paradigm, and it's been bad because we don't talk to our children enough about sex, about a lot of things. And I'm glad you have your new sex website, too. So you
right.
know, talk a little bit about that. You know, we've got the highest HIV. They say it's almost as high in America now as in some of our cities as it is in, you know, the Sudan and South Africa.
Well, it's been such a taboo. My sister and I, attorney Clara King, we authored a book, recently released our newest book, on What You Should Do Before You Get Hitched. And in that book, we dedicate a whole section on things that you should know, things you should ask your intended mate about sex, because we feel that it's really important. You don't wait till after the marriage, then you start trying to ask certain questions. And if you can't be honest with each other going into a marriage, you don't really need to get into it, because you're in it for a long haul. If you can be honest, what type of relationship you think you're going to have? There are a lot of people suffering from certain medical conditions that impact their sexuality. So they need to talk about it. It doesn't mean that the person would not want them to be their husband or their wife, but they shouldn't have to discover such issues that important. You know, I had talked to a young lady once. She was dating a man and found out that he was on all types of medicines, you know, that impacted sexuality, had no sex drive. Well, I mean, how you going to get married to somebody and don't talk about that? But people don't want to talk about it. That's why we created the type of question that you should ask, the things that you should know. So that's why we do that. And I created the website, Dr. Rosie, sextalk.com, because, I mean, where do they get certain information from? We're not just talking about methodology. We're talking about things that people need to know. You know, you have people sometimes with disabilities. Do they have sexual desire? Yes. Do they need to know certain maneuvers to keep their marriage going? Yes, but who's talking about it?
Right, and you know, high blood pressure in the black community.
Yeah,
diabetes. High blood pressure affects men's potency, too. So.
Yes, and sometimes when men have had heart attacks, they're afraid to have sex. They're afraid they may have a heart attack. So, but who's going to talk about it? So I felt, well, hey, somebody need to, so why not me? So, you know, why not do it? And also setting up one sex talk and relationship talk for teens, because nobody's talking to the young people. They don't have a radio talk show. They have no format. We don't know what's on their mind, and the only somebody they have to talk to is their friends who's standing on the corner, don't know any more than they do. But that's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is. Well, that's good that you have those different websites. Give them out again, Dr. Milliken.
Okay, it's www.drrosiesextalk.com. We have drrosie.com. That's my website where my books, the books that I've personally authored there, my bio and a few radio interviews, and also that's where my talk show is. I do an internet talk show every Tuesday from 10 to 11 Pacific Standard Time. And my publishing website is professionalpublishinghouse.com. And those who are interested in the Writers Conference, you can go to www.blackwritersontour.com. So we're just trying to put it out there.
Yes. What have been some of the changes you've seen since you first started Black Writers on Tour, and do you ever get discouraged?
The only thing that I get discouraged by is actually has to do with the children writing contests. When there are so many children, we're trying to create a love for writing because they are the next generation, Dr. Thompson. If they don't write, then how can we preserve our history if we don't develop our young children? So the only thing I get discouraged by is the participation sometimes, the lackadaisical on the teacher's part in the schools when we send them the information instead of them preparing the children and helping them or encourage them to present their stories where they can win $100 first place, 50 second, and 25 third. That they don't work with them and don't try to encourage them. I don't know if it's because they're embarrassed for their school. If the children would write something, it may be so poorly written. Maybe they're ashamed to try to enter their students. I don't know what it is. Now, that's the only thing that made me disencouraged. It's when the failure of their part to get these children, you know, to write.
And how about the churches? How do you feel? Do you feel the churches have been cooperative or
no,
supportive?
They have not. You know, you send them information. You send them flyers. You send them announcement. They're trying to get them to get their children involved, to sit at the feet of the elders who are given wisdom, pearls of wisdom at the conference. It's like they anything outside of church, they don't. Many of them don't seem to have any interest, you know, in that. And it's interesting because they're the one who says, you know, tell their members, study to show you thyself approved. And I have to laugh at that because how can you study if you can't read?
I'm wondering if some of them are still. I went to a little small church, and, you know, it was warm, and they did some great things having the children dress up for Black History Month is all the way up to Michelle Obama and President Obama. But I could tell that the minister was kind of illiterate. We used to have a lot of African-American illiterate ministers, and I mean, they could preach. They would know the Bible. A lot of people used to know the Bible and did not read. I don't know how that was, but some of them today, I think, need to kind of go to school or...
They really do, because, you know, that's one thing that you don't know criteria. A person just can say, God called me, and they get their family, and they get a bill, and they rent it and start a church, you know. But I think we just need to go to the next level, because usually ministers who are well-educated, they understand the importance of education, and they tend to, you know, encourage their members' children. In other words, they're more into education, where you have some of them will say, well, you don't need a PhD to get to heaven, all that kind of craziness, because they are not educated, and they don't want members sometimes to be more educated than they are. But I think a person who's, you know, who has that shortcoming should surround themselves around smart people. But some people feel insecure with that.
Right. And some people use religion as a crutch and use it in a way that they keep their members from growing and helping each other. You know, it's something we always talk about. There should be a prison ministry. There should be a HIV ministry. There should be a lot of ministries in a lot of these churches, food giveaways, and they're not doing that. It's just come on Sunday, hoop and holler and shout.
Even drug ministry. There's a lot of people. We're in a drug epidemic. There's a lot of people, almost every home got somebody on drug or alcohol. So there should be a ministry to, you know, to address that part. That's part of the church. There are alcoholics in the church. You know, there are alcoholic ministers. When people embrace that, you know, and try to heal, that's the thing to do instead of trying to hide everything and be ashamed of it.
Yeah. And that's why I think Black Writers on Tour is more than just a writer's conference. Is a cultural forum, and you have a lot of things that are related to writing, but you also have some workshops that you have annually that are not related to writing, such as the Elder Speak. So go through some of the workshops that you're going to have this year.
Well, Let the Elder Speak workshop, that's a forum made up with writers from age 65 to 100, and we have Professor William, who does the workshop, Spirituality versus Religion. He's very controversial. So there's a lot of people who come out to that workshop. And one I think that's very good, Dr. Thompson, is called Looking at the Literary. It's a close-up look at job, careers, and the publishing industry. And there are many. When our youth are in school, they need to understand that editors, proofreaders, ghostwriters, formatters, graphic designers, illustrators, all of these are jobs and professions in the industry. And it's unfortunately that we have young people who come out of high school having no clue that these professions or careers are out there. And writing is not going to go into place. Every movie, every sitcom, it's about somebody writing something, every textbook. So I just want to expose the community to the writing industry, the publishing industry at large.
Yes, and it definitely can make you a living, because I know I've made most of my money through different parts of what I like doing, which is writing. And mm-hmm. We're so used to one of the seven laws of Steve Jobs, the one who died, the Apple founder, and I like what he said. He actually got paid $1. His last year, he said, if you're doing what you love, you do it for free, which he had so much money from all his other money.
That it didn't matter.
Right. But he said, do what you love. Say, passionate people make a difference in the world. They make changes. Don't try to sell products. Try to sell vision and ideas for people. And I think you've always said that, too. You would always say, you know, it's yourself that you're selling, not just your books.
Yeah, I tell people always, as an author, your book should be, you should be the product yourself, and the book will just follow naturally. because people have to embrace you. They fall in love with you. And then they want everything that you have on their table, whether one book, five, or ten.
Yes, and we've seen that with Ayala Benzet. I saw her again on Oprah's, her new station, OWN.
Okay.
And she's back now. I think all the stuff she went through, she's been through so much, losing her daughter, so many things. But that sparkle is back in her again. And I said, oh, my goodness, I could see her books for sale. She was just, it's in the life lessons class, and she'll be starting her own show on the Oprah's network. So I'm so happy. You had said you hoped that would happen, and that is happening.
Right. I am so happy for her.
Oh, yes.
And
I mean, she's just
going to be better than ever because she has more insight now, more experience with death.
Oh,
so
yes.
So she would be great.
Oh, yes. She said something yesterday. I mean, these things just come off the top of her head. A mother came up because she's the one who said, we keep having this story, and we use that as our new addiction. Okay, you've been off drugs 10 years, but you're still using that as a fix, but I'm not happy. It's worse since I've been sober. You know, so your history of your past, you let that kill you. But I liked how she told the mother who had an autistic child, being a mother, you are supposed to be like God's representative, you his hands and his feet on earth. You know, that she shouldn't sit. She said, you asked to be a mother. You know, she was so disappointed her child was autistic. But she said she knew an autistic child whose mother, whenever she came in the room, the child lit up and the energy was so good because the mother gave him so much love. You know, and this mother was struggling with that because she didn't really feel, she was disappointed that God had cheated her by giving her autistic child. So, I mean, it's just so many good things you can learn with people who are, it's themselves. And now I'm sure her books are going to really be selling because I knew she had a new book out because it's her that we bought. That's why she sold 8 million copies before. And so,
that's why I say you are your best product. You know, people buy you. When they buy you, they will buy all of your books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy for her. And hopefully that she'll have a new book out because she, you know, always touched the heart of people, you know.
Yes, one woman Skyped in from India, and she told her, I love you, you know, because she was having problems. And she told her, be honest, you know, because I think so many of us don't want to be honest and admit when we have relationship problems and don't even want to confront the person. But it was just funny that now with technology, this isn't just a conference. This is a worldwide conference. It's on Facebook. And I say it would be nice one day when Black Writers on Tour can be on Facebook. As a matter of fact, that's where we should have a laptop there, you know, and someone who's savvy and know how to upload pictures while we're doing the Facebook.
You know what? I'm going to ask the guy to do that. You just gave me an idea that they can be up on Facebook. They can hear part of presentations, you know.
Right, because that's what they do.
We really
now
do have that technology.
Oh, yes, and then they Twitter it, too. So between Twitter, you know, I hate how Twitter sometimes is used just to bash people and to get fights and beefs going, but I think Twitter can be a great advertising tool for writers, too.
Oh, I think so, too. You know, so you just gave me an idea. So we need to look at, you know, doing some tweets during the whole time the conference is going, you know?
Right, and Skyping, too. I don't really know how to Skype, but that Skyping is good, too. Instead of, remember how you used to pay people to have the video, and then sometimes they lose it.
Right.
Do it right when it's happening, and that could be free. We are, as long as somebody who has a good computer and has Skyping and can
Jamal
upload
is good
it
with that. You know, I do his, you know, his network for my internet show.
Yes.
So he's a pretty much of a pro. So all these things that you are talking about, we are definitely going to, you know, just that's what it's for us to do it, you know?
Right. And there's so many other good things. Let me see if we have any emails because I sent the press release out on, I put it on, I added up as 25,000 people in the different groups that I sent it out on Facebook, then on Twitter, and also my Yahoo groups, but I'm wondering, do we have any emails?
Not at the moment, but once we do, I'll let you know.
Okay, well, people generally like to listen to you, Dr. Milligan, because you really always have such good insight. And, you know, I'd like you to just try to let them understand the importance of Black Writers on Tour. Why do you feel this is important? And you brought it back after you had stopped doing it, and then you came back and did it after a couple of years. Or was it a year that you took a break?
I took a break for a year, and it was just like fire shut up in my bone. Every time I would see these books and see people trying to figure out how to do it, I'm tired of people being ripped off financially, economically. So, and I think they need to know the business side. See, when people come to me and they want me to publish their work or to help them set up their company, I want to make sure they see it as a business. If they don't see it as a business, Dr. Thompson, I don't even want to work with them, because they will not be successful unless they have a business mindset, because it is about a business. Everything you do, you have to market. There are people who don't have bookmarks. They don't even have a business card. They only have a book. They have to know how to go to the next step. They think they'll put a book out there and everybody will jump up the next morning and go click on Amazon.com and look for that book. And I have to say to those people, how often do you get up and go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and search for a book? And then they go, I don't. I said, what makes you think everybody else is doing that every day? You have to create the funk around the book, and that's the buzz. You know, throwing out press release, it makes a difference. Like, I have an author who wrote a book. It's called On the Wings of the Wind. From Clarity, you know, talks about clarity in her life. But in her book, she's 80 years plus. She's written a lot of good stuff. And she made a comment in her book that she wants women to know that being a mother and a housewife is just as important role as any other role that women can have. Now, that's when you jump right off in it, when they're dealing right now talking about the importance of Romney wife or stay-home mother, you haven't worked. You remember that debate?
Yeah.
So when you write off into that and you've written books that already address that, you got to understand, let me throw a press release out here. Let me give my spin on that. That's why these conferences are so important, so authors can learn how to market, how to work that book. You understand how important that is? When the, across the media, the president is making statements, it's a political thing about the importance of a housewife. Mm-hmm. Stay-home moms, they've been talking about that. So this is the time for her to throw her tidbit in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's time to either blog about it, do an article, or do a press release, because
right,
it might not get picked up, but then if you have it in the three different forms, article, blog, or press release, you could Twitter. I found with my blog, it's easier for me to put it on Twitter and Facebook because it has HTML to it.
Oh, okay. And they can go and connect to it.
Right, and then people can click on it, and not only will they see my books, they'll see the blog. And, you know, a lot of times I have you come as a guest blog, and I'm going to have another guest blogger come on. I plan to do a bigger blog this time around myself for my book. But yes, it's it makes a big difference when
why conferences are important, so people can learn how to do all these things. You know, how to go on Facebook, how to blog, how to create a follower. Some people get on Twitter and they don't invite, you know, other people to be their friends, and they'll go through 3 years only with a few friends because they don't know how to invite or ask someone to tweet, you know, to follow them.
Or either you follow back when somebody follows you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put articles up, I tend to put a lot of articles from the book market trade, and it comes from London. But they'll keep up with Amazon and all the different fights that's going on and the different lawsuits that they're having. And, you know, and then they keep up with bookstores and the sales for the bookstores. And so I'll put that on Twitter, and I noticed that I'm being followed by people that are in the publishing industry. So I don't have a lot of followers, but it's people that, and so I tend to follow back to them.
Right.
I want to be in the people who are in my same target group and interested in what I'm interested in.
Right. Dr. Thompson, what happened to the book clubs? I remember sending a letter recently talking about how important the book club used to be, you know, in our community, because that's what really got people talking about books and reading and increasing book sales. So have they died on the vine? Because I talked about the need for someone to start a children, I mean a small children book club where parents can meet and bring their children, and they all read a book, and you'll get to see, test your children reading comprehension, see them interact around books. It's like they fell off the wagon. What happened?
I went to one, got a ticket going all the way to, I think it was Montclair, but they have them, and they still have small groups. They're not as big as they used to, but they seem to have them more in the South. One of the writers I represent, Suzetta Perkins, she always gets royalty checks, whereas I haven't seen that consistently with anyone else with her, because she's in a book club, over a book club, I think she's in a writer's group, and she goes to book clubs. They invite her all the time, but she's in Fayetteville, North Carolina, so, I mean, she goes up and down that eastern seaboard, and then she goes to Chicago, and then she goes to the South. I mean, they just send for her all the time. So the writers who work the book clubs, they get referrals from other referrals, and I've seen it make, I don't care how bad they said the publishing industry was and how bad the economy got, she's always had book sales. So those book clubs can be very good, and she gets a book deal with Simon & Schuster every year, too, because they know, and all her books, all seven of her books are in print. So I say sometimes I prefer, I've seen that I've had some people where it looked like they were just going this and that, but they didn't move fast. I'd rather slow and steady building an audience, because she said that some people come to her at book signings and they'll have all four or five of her books and want them signed. But she works the system, but she's the one who, right. I call her the book club queen, because she really gets out there.
That's good. That's the idea of Black Writers on Tour, a sharing, exchanging ideas. How are you making it work for you? When sometimes authors come there, they're so down, their book has been out 2 or 3 years, they have maybe sold 50 books, they don't know where to go now, and they get there and they meet up with other authors talking about what it is that they did. That's one way that Black Writers on Tour have really helped authors, because it took them out of the little vacuum they were in and helped them to think outside the box.
Yes, and you've had some good,
waiting on bookstores. You know, bookstores are fighting for space. And I have to ask authors a question. How often do you go into a bookstore and buy a book? And some of them go, maybe once a year. Well, what makes you think everybody else is knocking the door down to go buy your book? So you have to create the funk, and maybe that would drive them in the bookstore. You know, a lot of writers just don't get it. They think everybody is just going to run out and buy their book.
Right. And you've had some good radio show hosts that came from New York and different places that have had the writers who came to Black Writers on Tour on these shows, too.
Right. Right. And that's important, you know, to create the radio talk shows. You got your local TV, your local cable, what do they need? They all have in common, they need guests. So, you know, now that's one thing we've added, Dr. Thompson, this year. We added our Toastmaster class, taking a look at how being a Toastmaster can increase your book sales. We just thought it was important to look at that, because when you have people that's doing radio interviews, they want to do a lecture sometime, and you can't get enough callers in. If callers are calling, you have to, you know, make your point and get the feel of the public. That's who your callers are. They represent, one caller represent hundreds of people who want the same question answered or thinking the same way. So if you don't allow them to get in when they're trying to, then you won't sell as many books, because the public doesn't get a chance to feel you. That's how they feel you when you're answering questions.
And how about the guy that's coming from Hollywood about getting, I'm going to my website on Maxine Thompson Books because I had a link to it, top writer, producer in film and television to present at Black Writers on Tour. Now, that's the one I want to go to.
have a lot of people want to go to that one. I know it's a guy coming from Bakersfield. Because there are a lot of people have an interest in turning their books into a movie. And I think we really do need to look toward that, because we need a new twist out here. People are tired of the same old stuff that we're looking at, you know. We definitely need to look at something new. There's no question about it, you know.
Yes, his name is Mark Scott Zachary.
Right.
Is it? Yes, and he's...
Right, he has a lot of credits, you know, a lot of credits.
Yes, so that is wonderful that we're going to have him there, too.
Right. So I'm excited about that, you know.
Yes. Corey, did I hear you say something?
Nope.
Okay, I thought I heard Corey. Might have been something else.
Oh, okay.
I'm still checking.
Well, I tell you, anybody want to jumpstart their business, they really need to get to the Black Writers on Tour Conference. We have writers coming from, you know, all across the United States because they want to make the connection. They want to increase their business, and it's about having the knowledge. He who has the knowledge is the one that's going to be most successful out here. And there's no question about it. And one thing I would say to the new writers out there, once you get your book, a lot of them are self-publishing their books. And before they can get started, somebody runs up to them and say, you know, I want you to help me publish my book. I had an author say that to me today. She just got her book out. And she said, I want to sit down and make an appointment with you so I can learn how to publish other authors because they want me to publish them. Now, my advice to a new author is learn how to get out there and get your book going. Don't sidetrack trying to help somebody else before you can get out there yourself, because it takes so much time. They have no clue that people will be bringing them books that's half written. They have to read. You should read it before you even send it to an editor. You need to know what the book is about. So I'm saying to new authors out there, build your company first. Get your feet wet. You know, get your book off the press. Dr. Thompson, you remember, we remember this guy who did that. I helped him do his book, and he out there had three or four people messing up their stuff. He didn't know what he was doing.
All right. Take your time and learn before you hang out your shingle. I always like how you say that, because I see that in the editing business, and I'm beginning to see where people are beginning to come to me because they see the difference. But this is because I'm continually learning the craft, growing, and I can look at a book, and I'm getting a feel from being an agent what's marketable. And I've worked on a lot of books that, like, the number one book on Black Expressions is one I had worked on, Baby Mama.
Okay.
Then I was told from this editor at Cash Money them that she had seen a better review for Baby Mama in Library Journal than the one they had that was under their company. So I say all this to say, when you can point to books that you worked on at a New York Times bestsellers, Essence bestseller, and I had a list of those, that lets me know now I have a feel. It's a gut level feeling, but it's also part spirit, part craft, part anointing, you know. But I have to read all the time. I'm not just sitting here, right? And when I'm people's agent, it's a big responsibility. So I'm kind of just waiting now until I find some writer that I really feel is worth that type of investment. It's a lot of investment. I do a lot of the editing for my writers that I'm the agent for. If not the whole book, enough to get their foot in the door, and then I'm coaching them on their career. And so I said, and I've learned that sometimes people, when things aren't going right because of the economy, they blame the agent. So I said, that's all right with me, because I'm going to put that energy into the writer's
work. Yeah, they can always find somebody to blame, but they got to do the work. You have to get, you know, the work in the face of the public, and you got to see it. In a business, you have a marketing plan. In a business, you have a budget. In a business, you have goals, and you have a mission statement. So as a writer, when you can see this as a business, you incorporate who is my market. Then once you identify who your market is, then how do I get to my market? There's no exemption when it comes to doing business. Because you're doing a home-based business, it is still a business. And you still have to follow business principles. And that's what I see a lot of authors are not doing. They're not following the business principles. And that's important.
Right, and they have to. And then there's another issue that it was sent to me as publishing drama where, okay, let's be straight with people. Let's stop taking people's books and putting your name on it. You know, it's a lot of things that have been kind of crooked that have been going on. And I just said, the article I planned to write, but then other things got in the way, is Black Business Karma. We got to be right in business.
Now, that is really, really the truth, Dr. Thompson. You can't put it any plainer than that. You know, it all comes back. You need to be fair. You know, give a right percentage. I mean, when I see some of these publishers, and they're coming out here and they're trying to do the same thing the mainstream public did to them, and I'm trying to say, how are you going to do the same thing, try to take everything from the writer, his intellectual property? How are you going to do like the people that you said you didn't want to be like?
Right. Not sending their royalties, not sending their statements. Come on now.
Right.
You
can't do that. Because you treat people the way you want to be treated. And if you always remember that, we would be okay, you know?
Right. We've had distributors go under. We've had companies go under because people are not getting paid. Writers are the bottom feeders. If it wasn't for the writer, the bookstore, the publishing company, no one would have jobs. And it doesn't make sense. The writers are the ones walking around broke. And everybody else riding around in
cashing in, huh?
Yeah, so it's time out for that. And that's why I do like the thing about self-publishing. And you're right. Black Writers
Can
teach you how to do this as a business and make money. A lot of people are making. One man I was reading where he made $30,000, I think, just between Christmas. But he's, you know, been out there. I think that's Jay Conrad, you know. And so people can make. I mean, 300, some people are making $30,000 a month. And listen to that teleseminar. And some are making $300,000 in a quarter and like that because they have found their market. They have found their readers, their target. And you can go directly to the readers now. That's something we didn't have before. You had to have, you thought somebody else was doing it. Nobody else is taking care of your business like you can. You can connect one-on-one with the readers. You don't need no intermediary or no middleman to say you're a writer. Now, if your audience can validate that you're the writer.
Right, and when your book is going to come out and when it's going to be put on the back burner, you're really in control. Now, I have books like Satisfying the Black Man, Satisfying the Black Woman. Those books were written in 1990s. Those books still sell just like I just wrote it. Well, that's the autonomy and the power that you have when you have your own publishing company. My books will never go off the market.
Right.
Every one that I've written still sells today.
Right. I mean, you go out and speak. Do you have any more speaking engagements coming up soon?
Yes, I'm speaking for the women. So it's a breakfast where Attorney Hopkins, they celebrate women of achievement. So this year they're honoring the elders, some, you know, elder women, talking about on the shoulders we stand. So I'm their breakfast speaker. That's on the 28th. That's the Saturday following Black Writers on Tour in Pasadena.
Okay, great. I know you've been back out on that speaking circuit, and so it's good you're having Toastmasters to encourage writers to go, you know, to be speakers. That'll help sell books as well.
Oh, by all means, that's the best way, because every time I go speak, you know, it allows me to go places where people say, well, I don't have a budget, I'm nonprofit. Well, you know, if they have the people there, I will walk away with money, because my books will sell.
Oh, yes, I've seen you really rack in the money because you're a great speaker. Now, all of us can't be a great speaker like you. But, you know, for us who, I think if we talk about what we're passionate, and I'm better as a teacher.
Right.
If we talk about what we're passionate about, we can sway the audience where they'll buy books.
That's why Toastmasters is so important, you know. It teaches you how to open, what to put in the middle of it as a sandwich, and how you need to close. Because if you don't know how to close, you just giving out a lot of good information, but you got to drive that set. You got to make the people see that book while you're talking about it. And that's what Toastmasters will help you to do.
Oh, yes. I might start back going to it. I remember when you had a group of us going, and we went about 3 or 4 years. So it was a lot of help. I mean, you've done a lot of things that have helped me with my radio show. I was always more of a writer, and I was shy and like that. I'm not, now you know I'm not shy anymore. And I like, though, when I have a guest, when I can sit back and relax. Like today, I've been able to just sit back and relax. The last three, the guest you referred to me, what's his name, Professor
Williams? Professor Williams. He would be here for Black Writers on Tour.
Oh, he was great. I didn't have to do anything. I had my feet up the whole time. But with you, it's because I'm so used to us having conversations. I keep jumping in because I said I could just sit back and let Dr. Milligan talk the whole time. Because you have information. I hate to say the newer writers, they only have one book and they don't really know as much.
And you have to. I watch you how you would teach, how you have to tie your book into a social setting, political, a family. Tie it in some type of way. It needs to be tied into something. People don't want to just hear about I, me, and mine. They really don't.
Right.
And that's what new writers have not been able to do, is tie their book into something that other people have some common interest in.
Right, and things that can help them heal and help someone else. If they say, oh, I had that problem and this person overcame it, I can overcome it. And that's what stories are about, and that's particularly in fiction or the nonfiction that are self-help books. And we need all that. We can't get enough books, so no one needs to ever say, oh, there are too many black books out there. We can never catch up.
You can't. And it's the twist you have to take. Like, I have a book. I think you may have seen it called August 1st. It's a fiction book, but when I put the twist on it for a press release, you know, it talks about, is there ever a time that you don't need God? Because this person, he had everything going. He used to pray for his direction. When he finished law school, got in the most prestigious school and got him a good job, he didn't see any need to even think about God anymore until he called his father, you know, and then who was a policeman and heard a gunshot. And he was out of state and had to come home. And had the best, his girlfriend thought she had everything rolling because he was her man. She was wealthy, never had to want for anything until she was kidnapped by one of the most notorious gang members in South Central. But he kidnapped her, but he was the one who saved her life. So the twist on it is you never know who can be in place to help you, because when she was trying to get away from the people who had kidnapped her, she ran across all kind of people. She was Caucasian. She ran across all type of people who turned their head, didn't give her any help. And this notorious gang member saw her, and he put her in the car with him and helped her to escape. So you never know. It's really, you would think it has the nonfiction twist in a fictional story. It's really a page turner. But you see how I took that twist.
Right, that's interesting.
About, is there a time that we don't need God?
Yeah, that's a good hook, too, and that's what I'll be talking about in the writers group. But please give out your websites one more time. We run a little bit over, Dr. Milligan.
Oh, okay.
I sure enjoyed it. Okay. Give out your website.
Thank you. That's www.blackwritersontour.com, blackwritersontour.com, and drrosie.com. That's drrosie.com. And professionalpublishinghouse.com. That's my publishing website. And Dr. Thompson, thank you so much for having me. So I hope we've said something that someone can benefit and get that baby rolling.
Yes, and plus, the show will be archived. It'll probably be up in a couple of days. And so it'll be here. And give the date and the time and the address. That's what you need.
Okay, the date is this Saturday, April 21st from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Carson Community Center at 801. That's East Carson Avenue in Carson, California. And for more information, you can call 323-750-3592 or visit us at www.blackwritersontour. Hope to see you there.
All right. Thanks again, Dr. Milligan, and I'll see you Saturday.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. Have a great week and see you at Black Writers on Tour. Love you all.